Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to this week's Runner's World podcast with me, Ben Hobson. And just me, I'm on my own this week. This week's guests are comedian, runner, and now author Paul Tonkinson and ultra runner Damien Hall.
Guest of the week, here in the studio. Guest of the week, sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete, could be a physio, or a complete unknown.
Paul, welcome to the Runner's World podcast.
Great to be here, Ben. Thank you.
I mean, it's almost like family.
Sort of. I feel part of the Runner's World family. I mean, Andy told me, the editor there, that I'd been doing the column for over 10 years.
Yeah.
Which, that's a long time, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's 120 columns on running. My goodness. The danger now is repetition, of course, but thankfully running's always changes as you change.
So well,
it's
it
fine,
does.
You know. And I enjoy doing the column every month. I get a lot of people coming up, enjoy reading it, and it's a nice connection. I mean, it plugs you into the community in a really nice way, you know. Every now and again you experience a running community in a different way and you realise what a gentle, kind of benign church it is, you know. I really appreciate it.
I think when something is so established as your column, you get feedback from it more regularly than you
yes.
would most other bits
yes.
that go in.
Yeah.
And it's definitely one of those things that people, I've been reading that for however many years.
It's just really nice. And people come up at races and sometimes gigs and stuff. And it's, I'd had it because I did a book signing at the National Running Show for the book, which obviously we're here to talk about. And they had loads of people queuing, and obviously they're at the running show, so they're captive. You'd hope to get a queue at a running show, and I did, thankfully, and I met a lot of people there, and a lot of them came through Runner's World, and they were really chatty and nice, and it was it means a lot to me.
No, I think we were very lucky for our little community. I say little now. It's the most popular thing in the world, apparently, running. But
well, the end game now is just everyone in a state of running constantly, isn't it?
I mean,
that's what we want. The running show, 60% more people went. There's more and more people just wandering around these running conventions, eating loads of like protein shakes and beetroot shots
yeah,
and stuff.
Everyone's had all their amino acids.
Yeah, it's crazy.
In case.
Yeah. There's guys trying to sell him on like the funkiest new shoes or get their gait analysis, but it's always the people selling the flapjacks who seem to be having the busiest stall. You know,
well, if it was
flapjackery or whatever,
oh,
the National Running Show, everyone
That's
was going
so
crazy
good.
For it. I'm joined in yet. I know it's only a matter of time.
Are you in your approach to running? Are you sort of a tech man, or have you had a gait?
Not really. I'm very much. I think because I used to run a lot in the 80s, I was very much sort of anti gear then. So most it was like. Even now, I run a lot off watch, and I don't. I'm not on Strava. I haven't really had my form analysed. I mean, these things could probably help, but for me, running's always been an escape. Really, it's always been a running, away from stuff or towards something else. But it's not been about monitoring it and comparing it to everyone else. It's time alone. You know, I like to go off grid, sort of thing.
Correct.
Yeah, but when I train hard, go to the club night, and everything's timed and stuff, that's a different thing. But for me, running, the root of it is just running for an hour in the woods and just chilling out. Really,
I think people have come into it in two ways. There's that way, which is the escapism, and then there's that sort of. Plugged in.
Yes, yeah, connectivity way. And
yeah,
I really
yeah.
get that. And I'm not saying I will never do it because I see the results of it. And the results of that connectivity, that mass connectivity thing, is more and more people getting into running and feeling connected with each other. And I mean, I do a podcast as well. So we're always anything you're doing is contributing to more people running, which is a good thing. I mean, we joked about the future is everyone running, but it is a good thing to run. It makes people feel better, and it's a complete no-brainer. So I'm all for anything that gets people running.
We will talk about your book now.
Okay, fine.
As we're talking about happiness.
Yes,
in a broader church. To 26.2 miles to happiness.
Yes, A Comedian's Tale of Running, Red Wine and Redemption. That is an important little subnote. Because I do still drink. I mean, I'm coming off the back of not a two-bottle Sunday, but a one and a bit bottle Sunday, yeah. So I'm slightly compromised. I like to mix and match, do you know what I mean? Yeah. I like the running as a corrective to the drink and whatever. So yeah, it's a book chronicling my attempt to beat 3 hours for the marathon in London a couple of years ago. Not the hot one, the one before the hot one.
Oh, the hot one.
No, I didn't do the hot one.
It was hot.
You did the hot one. I've heard it was hot.
It was warm.
Yeah. And it was sort of, the book's in three strands, really. On one level, it's the story of the race day, and that's all written in the present tense. And that's the sort of motor that drives the book. And then there's the 4 months of the training period and the slow sort of surrender to my inner extremist, because I like to drink, I like to eat, but there's a part of most of us as well that is quite extreme, and it was quite nice to just say I'm going to be really extremist about this goal for a few months. I got a lot out of that. I really, really enjoyed it. So it was detailing that, and then it was going back to my childhood and me starting running and the journey of sort of exploration of maybe why people run marathons and what's in it for people when they run marathons. Because I think it can be quite a meaningful event for people. I think people can get a lot out of it. So it dealt with that. And I really enjoyed writing it. I really enjoyed the process, yeah.
Did you find the writing as cathartic as the running?
Sort of, yeah. I mean, It was weird because the running and the book was sort of became a little bit one in my mind, because it was like I knew I wanted to beat 3 hours for the marathon. I knew I wanted to write a book about it, but I knew I'd only get a book commissioned if I beat 3 hours for the marathon, because no one wants to read a book about a bloke who didn't beat 3 hours, who gave it everything and didn't do it. So do you know what I mean? The one they sort of became melded, you know, and it became a symbol of achievement for me, that if I can beat 3 hours of marathon, then I can get the book done. And the book, you know, and I've always wanted to get a book published. So the two became one. And I think the marathon can offer people that. Not necessarily beating 3 hours, but on any level, it gives you a nice task that is achievable. And it can give you a bit of confidence, and that can parlay into other areas of life. And it's also got a very definite and simple relationship between effort and reward, which I talk a little bit about in the book. And I think that's quite addictive to people as well. In life, we're measured by certain metrics that we might not even understand. Social media stuff, or there's things going on at work, there's algorithms, there's KPI, whatever it is. There's all this stuff happening. And we can't really control it. We do our best. And we're always, you know, just, you know, 10 minutes away from the tap of the shoulder, and HR wants to see us and, you know, take your things. Do you know what I mean? It can be quite a panicky environment.
Yeah.
But running gives you a thing of like, I ran 8.5 miles this morning at a slow pace. But it gave me something that I'll carry forward to tomorrow, and I'll run a bit more tomorrow. And it adds up, and that's how training works, isn't it? It's a very simple process. And if you do that, chunk it down, achieve something, say run a marathon, it can spin off into other areas, certainly.
How do you find running and performing when you're doing your stand-up or those sorts of things? So the two, is that where you can think of material?
Yeah, I sometimes can think of material. I mean, it helps because stand-up is a lot of stand-ups, they wear themselves out. It's quite a tiring profession. There's a lot of late travel, late night travel and driving, and the diet can be bad. So it's nice to have that thing, that sort of corrective to the excess of it, and time to think and time to get away from it. And it can be a creative time, but I don't think let's go and think of some ideas and go for a run. They kind of come to you in the process of the run, often usually whilst not searching for them, don't they? In that sweet spot between 35 minutes and 50 minutes. So if you're fit enough to get there without any discomfort, that's where you just start to feel, that's where the endorphins come in and simple, clear thoughts can come into your mind. And that to me, that is the sweet spot, yeah.
You ever seen anything particularly hilarious going out on a run that's really sparked? Something particularly odd in the first thing in the morning when you're out before most? And you
I mean, for that to happen, I'd have to be out first thing in the morning, which is very rare. Very, very rare occurrence in my life. It tends to, I had one run once where I just kept falling down. I don't know if you've had those runs where it just, I fell down once and I thought I've fallen, so that's fine. Just get yourself together. It's fine. And for some reason, I fell down about five or six times in this run. It was like I was cursed. I came back, and I fell down into fences. I got all scarred down my arm. It felt like I'd been in a war by the time I got back. I'd just gone for a run. You know, it's sort of. I find running kind of, you're never quite the same person when you come back from a run than when you set off. It kind of dissolves. A separation between you and the rest of the world in a little bit. You're much more chilled on your way back, aren't you? And that's the attraction of long distance running, really, isn't it? And it seems like the longer you get, the more chilled out you get. Like I met Camille Heron the other week at the running show. And I don't know, have you ever met her?
No.
She's the most relaxed character you could ever hope to meet. These ultra runners, she was like the physical embodiment of goo in front of you. She was so sort of gushing and chilled. And she was talking about, I don't want to put people off their lunch, she was talking to me about having diarrhea in her latest world record attempt. She just said, I had diarrhea, you know, it was really, I had explosive diarrhea. And everyone was so stressed about it. I was like, I didn't attach to it. I just had diarrhea. It's fine. I'm not bothered. Why are you? She was so chilled about something that was obviously very stressful. Yeah. She was having public explosive diarrhea. You know, that's not an ideal scenario, is it? But, you know, she wasn't bothered at all, and she got a world record. And yeah, she was very inspiring to me, actually. And I find that's the attraction of running, isn't it? And that's where it can get a little bit dangerous, actually, because you enjoy it. Mm. And you think, this is enjoyable. Why not just keep running? And then you just run and run and run. Do you know what I mean? Just run forever. You know?
So you're not put off. You think an ultra could be something.
I'm doing a 50K in the summer, which is that's a mini ultra, isn't it? And I'll just see how it feels, that going beyond 26, and whether that slow, I don't know whether I've got the patience to run that slow. Mm. But at the same time, there's a nagging sensation that maybe it might be the thing I enjoy most. I need to experience it first to find
out. Yeah. Have you ever done it?
No.
I'm not a huge distance man.
Okay, cool.
I fall amongst that group of people when they, oh, I'm a runner. Oh, yeah. Oh, what's your marathon time?
Yeah.
Oh, it's not.
You don't have to have a marathon time. No. What events do you like running?
I like 5K, 10Ks and 5Ks.
5K
and
10Ks, they're great races. Yeah. They're brilliant distances, aren't they? Yeah.
They're super fun.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Can get really competitive. I love a 5K. 5K in the track. I love a 5K in the track. Mm. Let's go. Let's do it, man.
Speed work stuff, I've always really found really... I mean, I'm not fast, but I just like that.
That intensity.
That intensity, yes. That feeling of pushing yourself when you're sort of hitting that red line and being
absolutely.
Like...
Absolutely, totally. Yeah. And you feel really clean afterwards. Yeah. And it's nice to do it in company as well, because that forces you to do it faster.
Oh, everyone's faster than me, so it's great.
Yeah. Totally. I'm like that at the club. I was in the middle of the B group. I'm now sort of sinking towards the end of the B group. The C group's calling me. The C group feels like just giving up all hope. Join the Cs. But I'm hanging on desperately to the B group.
Yeah. Have you always been a club runner?
Well, I ran as a club runner when I was at Scarborough as a kid. That was between about 14 and 16, 17. And I was really into it then. Then I moved to North Hallett and ran for Richmond and Zetland. And then I lost running for about 15 years. And I've joined London Heathside about 4 years ago, because I was trying to, in order to beat 3 hours of the marathon, I knew I'd need help.
Yeah.
And I got help. And I would say to anyone, if they want to improve their running, join a club, because you're just tapping into all that reservoir of expertise and experience that people can give you, and inspiration from people just doing these track sessions and the pain they can cope with. And you know, there's something about it, isn't there? You know,
there's those sessions that you don't want to do, and then you go along to.
Yes.
And there's that one person who goes, come on.
Let's do it. Let's just do it.
Pull your finger.
And also the Rome. I don't know if you go to the track in the winter, but the romance of a floodlit track on a winter's evening. There's something. It just brings up the child in me. Or like club track championships during the summer months. It's like school sports day again, isn't it? You get old guys doing the javelin against like 12-year-old girls and stuff. It's a real mix and match element to it that I really like.
No, it's really good fun. So what's next then, apart from an ultra?
I'm gonna do Manchester Marathon. I'm gonna do London. I'm going to do maybe Windermere. I'm doing an ultra. I'm doing New York, and then in the middle, I'm gonna do some track racing. And then I need to sort out my next book. What it's going to be about? Whether it's going to be about running? If so, what aspect of it? As I say, I've enjoyed this one. Hopefully, it'll land. It seems to be selling well, and reviews seem to be nice. A lot of people are enjoying it. So, you know, it's been a very enjoyable process. Yeah.
We did a podcast about books, running books especially. The sort of like, I think a lot of people have found running through like picking up a version of, you know, like, like running with the Kenyans or something
Scott
like that.
Jurek or something like that.
And sort of reading into it. And I think that people... it's an odd thing, I think, to read about someone else's running in a way, because it's running is such a lone...
pursuit,
but it's kind of it's also incredibly emotive because you can relate directly to what someone's going through.
Yes, yeah. I mean, talk about running's like, you know, sort of dancing about geography or something, isn't it? It's a bit. It sounds weird, but people like doing it, don't they? They like to share why they do it and what they get out of it, and they like to read about it. I mean, I read loads of running books when I was a kid, like books that you could like. When you look on Amazon now, they're like, you know, £250 to buy, like old Jim Ryan autobiographies or the Ron Hill biographies, or loads about Herb Elliott and Percy Caruti and just old school Arthur Lydiard, loads of old school athletes. I've absolutely loved it, Bruce Tullow and Gordon Peary and all these old, really old athletes. And I got loads out of it. And then the new ones coming through, the Ed Harahan Finn and, you know, the Scott Jurek and Dean Karnazes and all that. Just really inspiring, aren't they? You just try to inspire people. I mean, hopefully mine will inspire and amuse people and open them up to the possibilities of what running can give you mentally. From a layman's perspective, I claim no expertise in this area above the experience of actually doing it and talking and writing. I've been writing about running a long time, as we've seen. So it's nice to kind of coalesce it all around an event. Yeah,
well, it's good to know you can write more than 700 words.
It's good to know I can write more than 750 words. But it's also applicable to non-runners as well. Hopefully non-runners will get a lot out of the book. I mean, my wife read it. She said, I really enjoyed it. But she said, I skipped the running bits. so a hearty recommendation from the wife there.
Oh, if you can't get a better review than that, I don't think. You should put that on the cover.
Yeah,
That's the
narrative motor of the book she skipped and enjoyed it still. So
you're also a podcaster.
Yes, we do running commentary every week. We recorded one this morning, actually. That was a run I went on. We've been doing it for about 3 years or so. Me and Rob Deering, we run usually through the woods together. Sometimes we do events. Mm. The difference with us is that we record the podcast while we're running.
Yeah. So
that was a nice, simple idea that I think gives it its unique thing. It's a slow burner. We don't do all the things that you're meant to do when you do podcasts. We're not very good at, like, appearing on others, although I'm on this podcast, but you know what I mean? You go on mine and I'll go on your, all that cross-fertilisation stuff that people get you, that the marketeers want you to do. We're not very good at that. But at the same time, it seems to be just slowly growing over time. And again, it's that connection with people that I get from the column, and it's an intimate connection. People feel they know me because I share a lot. I'm just very open with it. It's reached a stage now where we forget it's been recorded, really. Yeah. It's just a chat between friends. And we get guests on. And what can I say? It works. It's a very simple thing that I really enjoy. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. We haven't been invited on anything, so there we go.
Maybe we'll get you on. Don't worry, we'll get you on there. I feel like I need to get you on. Yeah.
My heavy breathing is not wanted.
We try not to breathe too heavily, but to be fair, I very rarely listen to it. When I do, I think, well, they are breathing there. That is breathing.
That is breathing.
But the good thing about it is things happen on the run. Every run's different, so we'll get attacked by a dog or something will happen, or there'll be a drama, I'll lose my phone, or things happen that make it a little bit different. And as we know from when you run, the chat gets better after half an hour or so.
Oh,
that was the impulse behind the podcast in the first place. So sometimes we'll be running for 1.5, 2 hours. It's a discursive, quite rambling affair, certainly.
Great.
Yeah, good fun.
Well, Paul, thanks so much for coming on.
It's been great to come in. Yeah, it's been great.
Good luck with the book.
Thank you.
Let's say good luck with the next one as well.
Yeah, of course, the next one. This one is out at the moment on Amazon and in good bookshops. Have a little look at it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
What do you think?
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Mr. Damien Hall, welcome to the Runner's World podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
If anyone has missed it, you set a very impressive new record for a winter Paddy Buckley by a mere 7 minutes. Was it a sprint finish after all that effort?
It was a bit, to be honest. I seem to have got into a bit of a habit of this, because in the summer I went and just about broke the sort of overall record on the Paddy Buckley, but I only did that by 11 minutes. And this winter one was a similar thing where, 7 minutes this time. So I've got into the habit of, I think I just get a bit kind of lazy about halfway round.
I'm not sure anyone can be lazy while taking on these things.
Well, I get a bit kind of, I don't know, daydreamy. Maybe that's the better...
Tired, maybe.
It could be tired, actually. It could be tired also. But, both times it's been a bit kind of desperate at the finish, a bit kind of... well, I suppose, like, in a way, running a road marathon, in that you're staring at your watch all the time trying to do the maths. Just luckily both times have just snuck under the previous record. So exhausting but exciting.
Do you have a favourite of the two then? Would you say that because the winter was harder, or was the summer more hard? You know, do you view them both equally, records?
Ooh, I think they were very different days out. I think the summer was in a way more exciting because I didn't know whether I was sort of capable. I've never considered myself a fell runner because I kind of grew up around the Cotswolds, and our hills aren't really, well, they're not fells, and probably people in the north wouldn't even call them hills. They'd just say they're bumps. So I never really thought I'm a fell runner. So I had this, it took me a long time to think, well, maybe I could, you know, take on this record. So I think the summer one was a bit more special in that it was like, oh, blimey. You know, that just happened by a few minutes. And then the winter one was, so I suppose for winter, I already had that idea of it's possible for me to break the winter record. But then the conditions on the day and leading up to it, the week or so beforehand, what's happened in the weather is a huge, huge factor. So although I've broken, say, Jim Mann's winter record, like he's a good friend, and he was quick to point out that he was in sort of waist high snow at some points. And he was one of the first to congratulate me, I should add. But so his round was really tough, and probably tougher than mine on the day. So that's the sort of problem with the winter ones, in that it can be quite variable. And I had snow. I think I had snow on like two-fifths of it.
Yeah.
But not, certainly not all the way around.
You did lose your map.
Yeah.
You did lose your map, though.
Yeah, so it was pretty windy. My map and my schedule blew away early on. I still feel terrible about kind of the relative littering there.
Right, good.
Because they haven't been recovered as far as I know. And later on, quite near the end, I lost a mitten again in the wind. Thankfully, it was near the end because it was cold enough that just one pair of gloves wasn't really enough. Thankfully, that was near the end. And someone found that mitten. They got in touch via Instagram and said, "Is this your mitten?" So I'm going to send them my other one, because I thought there's no point of both of us having a spare mitten. And I didn't want to be rude and say, "Could you send it down?" So I'm going to send him my mitten so that they can be reunited, because my mitten does look a bit lonely.
It's a record-breaking mitten. I'm sure he will keep it forever.
Well, one of them's a record-breaking mitten.
Yeah, true. The other one, the DNF.
Yes.
These rounds that you do, and then obviously Nikki, when you did the UTMB, Nikki Spinks was on your team helping you, and you know the things that she does, and all the guys that innovate, and you know all these sorts of things. There's a real sort of tradition around these rounds, and a sort of nostalgia to them. Is that part of what inspires you to go and take these things on?
Yes, I think so. There is a really nice, although I did this one on my own in the winter, there is a really nice community feel around each of them, I suppose, and I think they're a little bit different. But then around these things, you know, several friends said, "I want to come and help you," and I kind of said, "Oh, sorry, I've already sort of committed myself to it being a solo, unsupported thing." And I think when you first think about doing these rounds, maybe people are a bit nervous because they sort of, well, there are several reasons to be nervous, but like nervous about asking people because, you know, it seems like a big ask. But actually, a lot of people just love going out in the hills, and I'm already supporting two or three people this year on Paddy Buckley rounds. And I don't expect anything in return. I get a great run out, and without the pressure of me going for a certain time or record. So there's a lovely atmosphere And community around them all, actually. It's a very good point. And Nikki Spinks especially has been really helpful and, yeah, just very inspiring. Like, you know, I go and do them once, she does them twice, but, you know, consecutively. Any minor achievement on my part pales into insignificance compared to what she does. I'd recommend people, you need to sort of take your time to get to know them a little bit, and you have to be really careful with the weather. That's a huge factor, even in the summer, of course, you know, being Britain. They're great adventures. They're great adventures. And of course, you know, they're not a race, so you're not tied down to a particular date. So you can sort of, you know, pick what times suit you and so on. So they're brilliant.
I think that lots of people might, I mean, certainly if you sort of saw a headline that said you'd broken this record, people would immediately assume that you're a pro athlete. And you are obviously a professional man who likes to go running, but it's not your job.
No, I mean, I do get a little bit of help. I'm lucky to have another main sponsor now as well, Tomax Technology, which is a surprising one probably for most people. So I have two people who help me a little bit, and means I can sort of get to some races that are abroad and so on, and take a small amount of time off to train.
Yeah.
But really, yeah, I've got a family to support, and that sort of income wouldn't be enough. Sometimes a journalist and sometimes a running coach as well to support all that. But you often hear from, you know, sometimes I hear sort of full-time ultra runners. Sometimes they get into trouble because they've almost got too much time to train, and they sort of, you know, train harder than they need to, or you know, overdo it a bit. I'm very happy with my lot. It's good. Thank you.
How do you strike a balance? What's the key to your success then with family life and training and work and those sorts of things?
Oh, yeah. It's hard to know if you've got the balance right, to be honest. It's a tricky one. I mean, my kids are. I tell myself I do a lot of this to try and inspire them and impress them, and hopefully one day they'll be proud of me, but they're not remotely interested in any of this. You know, I sort of come home all broken and, you know, bits of me are a mess and I'm exhausted, and they're not interested at all. You know, I try and show them a picture or two or something, and they're like, yeah, whatever, which is fine and probably the way it should be. It, you know, brings me back to earth, and it's a reminder that, you know, it's more important, you know, to be a good dad. You know, to them, I've just been away for 4 or 5 days. It doesn't really matter what I was doing. So, yeah, they keep me in check for sure. And in terms of getting the right balance, I don't know. I don't know if I, you know, get it or not. I suppose I definitely have times of the year where it's sort of downtime and family time more sort of deliberately, you know, after a big race often or around now, I suppose. But even whether you're a runner or not, I think any parent is always wondering, have they got, you know, are they being a good parent? Have they got the balance right? And if they are wondering that, then they're probably doing, you know, pretty much the best they can, I think. Tricky one.
No, it is always a tricky one. We actually had me and Rick had a conversation on the balance of parenting and running, and how the two are wonderfully they complement each other wonderfully, but can also be in stark contrast, I think, in terms of we go running and we become better people for it, but at the same time that's time away, so there's always this sort of tricky balance between the two.
Yeah, I mean, the trap I fell into for a bit was, like, I'd get up extra early to do my long run, but then, of course, by 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm totally useless and grumpy. And you know, and maybe being a bit unfair on my children, a bit snappy, you know. So I've tried to work hard at being better at that, I suppose. And also, I mean, running, what's amazing about running is it's so flexible. So, you know, you can, if you have to, you can wait till they're at bed and go out at 8 or 9 o'clock at night or get up early. That's wonderful. So I used to play a lot of football. And, of course, you can only really do training at a set time and play your games at a set time. But the worst thing about running is it's a terrible spectator sport, isn't it? So if you bring your family along to watch, which my, you know, my wife has thoughtfully brought them along a few times, and it's often, like, you know, an hour of them hanging around to see me for 20 seconds, and, you know, that's that's probably not going to capture their imagination in the long term.
I think you say it's a spectator sport, and you're right. I think that's a tricky one. But you're quite sort of you're well documented, I would say, that in your screen time appearances. You had Underdog detailing your journey towards the UTMB, and then the Kate Rath stuff that you filmed as well. Is that something that you've always sort of you just embraced because it was a nice way of documenting what you were doing when you were running?
I guess it's partly because the filmmakers Matt and Ellie Green, who are Summit Fever Media. They're really good friends.
Right.
In fact, Matt is the guide father to my son. We met at the Spine Race where they provide the daily videos for that as well. So we just got on really well. And with Underdog, that was sort of totally their idea. And then Wrath again was mostly their idea. And in a way, I see these projects as like getting to hang out with them, my friends, a bit more, you know. And then a couple of times they've made films of what we've been up to. And I have asked, you know, I have almost forced my children to sit down and watch them. And they've just said, yeah. Their comment is, weird.
Yeah, weird.
I reached a strange point maybe a year or two ago where my two most recent runs had both been like film projects, and I kind of thought, yeah, I definitely want to do some runs where I'm not filmed for a bit now. It's nice to not have that extra element all the time. But hopefully it provides work for some friends of mine, and hopefully it hopefully some people somewhere like it, and if they don't, you know, that's all right too.
So now post Paddy, what are you aiming towards?
Well, I've got two sort of big A races in the calendar for the year. One is, I only do races now, starting with UTM. So I'm doing UTMB for a fifth time. I had 1 year away, and I did quite miss it. So I thought I'll give it another go.
Yeah.
It's a bit kind of addictive.
But you were fifth. That was the year before you got fifth, right? So it's obviously the goal, obviously, to do better.
Yeah, this is something that I think is going to play on my mind most of the year, about whether that's really possible or not. I don't know if I'm. I think at the moment I'm thinking another top 10 would be a good achievement. I'm worried that if I obsess too much over beating fifth place, obviously there aren't so many places ahead of fifth, and there are a lot of good runners doing it. I worry that I'd get too obsessed, you know, over that, and would not, you know, say I was going to finish seventh or eighth. That's still pretty good, I think. But
I think that's all right.
Thank you. I've got some time to sort of get mentally situated for that. And the other big race I'm going to do is UTMS,
right?
Which is the S stands for Fuji, as in Mount Fuji. So it's a 100-mile race in Japan in April. I've been having a bit of a crisis of sort of angst about that, because it's such a long flight, and I'm trying to be a lot more sort of carbon conscious about sort of my running. So I've sort of already offset it, but I know that's not, you know, a perfect world. That's kind of greenwashing. But I've chosen not, that will hopefully be my only flight this year, and UTMB, I'm going to get trains there. So I'm trying to be a lot more sort of carbon conscious, because I think sometimes, yeah, some of us sort of ultra runners are kind of going, oh, we love mountains, we love the world, we love all these green places, and then we're sort of flying six or seven times a year.
Right.
Now, I'm not meaning to sound preachy or judging of others, but I thought I can't do that again like I did last year. So I'm doing a few more domestic races as well. We've got lots of great races to do in this country, so I don't feel like I need to do lots of races abroad.
Provided me a fantastic, convenient segue, just to note, the latest issue of the magazine is a greener issue, detailing how runners can be slightly more environmentally minded. So, and travel is one of them, and having an adventure nearer to home is something that we talk about. So I think that you've already done a great job of promoting that for us, so thanks a lot.
Well, yeah, and I loved getting that issue through my door, and I think it came in paper rather than plastic.
That's the aim.
It was a really good issue, and there's some really important topics covered there really well. So I was punching the air in delight when that came through, not least because you'd sneak me into your top 50, Heroes or something, which I felt a little bit shy about, because almost everyone else was doing more than me. But I was still, yeah, thank you for featuring me. And it's a great issue, it really is.
Oh, good. Well, Damon, thanks so much for joining us. It was really good to catch up with you, and all the best for the racing this year.
Thank you very much indeed, and keep up the great work with the podcast.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runners World podcast. A big thanks to our guests, Paul Tonkinson and Damien Hall, and of course to you for listening. The Runners World podcast was recorded at Number 8 Studios in Soho. It's available on Acast, iTunes, and all of your favourite podcast apps. If you've enjoyed the episode, please give us a review, and remember to tune in next week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavourless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.